It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Access of Easy. This is number 344, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching as I move my laptop to a more favorable location. My name is Joey. That's Len. Buddy, what's going on over there? How are you?
It's Friday. But you know what, Joey? I'm not playing golf, which is not...
Yeah, what is that all about? It's not a blizzard outside. You should be already out there in shorts and t-shirts hitting a few balls off the range, right? Getting warm, loosening up.
I should be. No, next week we're going to start our golfing season. It's not warm enough and it's still wet. So I'll wait a week. You know, I have so many coupons. Collectively, a bunch of us have so many coupons. We're going to be playing until maybe June or July every week and just to run out of these coupons. Hopefully it doesn't rain on us because we got to get rid of these coupons. So many of them.
One of these Fridays, I will make it out with you for 18. I'm not that good, but I would like to play around with you. I'm sure it'd be fun. I know it's wet, and I don't know where you are, what the weather's like, but here I just had to take my dog. I usually take him for a walk around this time, or my wife does. And I had no cream or sugar or milk in the house, so I went to McDonald's for coffee. It was snowing when I left the house, so not favorable for golf. That's for sure. I don't know where you are or where you were planning on going, but not great where I am. That's for damn sure.
No, luckily it's nothing here. There's no precipitation falling from the sky. It's good. It's actually decent. Just cold, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's fine. It is frick it. So we got six stories today. Some great ones. I got to tell you, Len, I laughed reading this week's newsletter, but we'll get into it. Let's start with the usual. Last week's quote of the week. What lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. That was from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and Cindy got it first. Well done, Cindy. Thank you for your contribution. This week's quote, once you replace negative thoughts with positive ones, you'll start having positive results. Sounds like something I've seen in a fortune cookie, though I'm not sure you could just write fortune cookie in the comments. So if you know who said that, put it in the comments. No Googling. You guys know the deal, and you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Len, where do you want to start? Can I suggest that we start with Epstein Island leak? Can we start there? Do you mind if we start?
We sure can, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to preface something here before I go into anything. I haven't really explored much about Epstein's Island thing. I'll be honest. It never really interests me all that much. And there's so much information and could be some misinformation too. I don't know. And I just didn't want to really dive into it. This is the first time I had to. But anyways, we have a privacy breach, a serious one at that. And it's with a data broker called, or used to be called, Near Intelligence. And this company was collecting location data from mobile devices. And the data revealed frequent trips by a bunch of wealthy and individual people to Epstein's Island. And this was even tracked after the fact Epstein was convicted as a sex offender. And the data, incredibly detailed. I'm shocked at how they got this information.
It is nuts. And this is only what Wired printed. You can imagine how deep this goes if Wired was able to get all this.
And they're saying they were able to pinpoint locations to within a few centimeters. That is not geo-tracking from cell phone towers. That is using something else.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure how they're able to determine this. So people that were tracked from Epstein's mansion all the way to his private docks, revealing their movements on the island. And the data covers a large period from 2016 to 2019. And what happened with Near Intelligence, they did the right thing. Of course, they sold this information to companies for advertising purposes. Why wouldn't they do that? But it's also been used by the US military. And this data leak obviously is raising a whole bunch of concerns for people because it exposes the movement of individuals without their consent. But did they consent when they signed up to using a phone like an Apple phone or iPhone where it says it's going to be tracking your information, tracking your movement? I think it's in the terms of conditions somewhere, but I don't know how they were. This company that has since filed for bankruptcy, now called Azira, has been able to get that detailed information on that precise in individuals. But U.S. regulators, they're investigating the company for the data collection practices. So that's as far as I want to get into this, because again, I never really dived too deep into this, and this is the furthest I ever gone into the Epstein's Island stuff. But yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
This is prime time, man. Are you kidding? Like, this is the thing that, this is the article that made me laugh the most. Okay, you and me talk all the time about how every single public-facing institution, honeypot, data collection, spreadsheet, municipal dossier, it's all just easy to get. Like, no matter where you are, your information is not safe. You can't help it. You're always going to get pwned by someone somewhere at some time because you just can't help it. Even the people who went to the island had their data stolen, their location data used against them. Like, even the most well-to-do, wealthy, top 1% of 1% of 1% people are not immune to this. Amazing. Guys like Bill Gates, guys like Donald Trump, guys like, you name it. The list of people that went to that Lolita Island, St. James Island, it's long and it's staggering, the status of some of these people. I'm not going to get into why they were going there and what the location data means, but I mean, everyone kind of knows what went on at that island at this point. I think it's a well-documented thing and a bit of an open secret and whatever. You can say whatever you want about that. Do you believe that a company that's able to do this kind of work goes bankrupt? How is that possible? How do they go bankrupt? Surely this is in demand, this service. So I don't buy that for a second. I think there's something going on there. That's really the thing in the story. The lead gets buried. The company went bankrupt. No, they didn't. There's no way. These guys are all doing something with that company and that data hardware and that ability to within centimeters. There's no way these guys are bankrupt, man. There's no way. So I don't know what's going on there, but this story made me laugh so much. I just couldn't believe it. Just unreal. Wired got 11,279 coordinates. And I'll just quote from the story. The show, not only a flood of traffic to Epstein's Island property nearly a decade after his conviction as a sex offender, but also point to as many as 166 locations throughout the U.S. where near intelligence infers that visitors to Little St. James, that's the island, likely lived and worked. That's crazy. To give you an idea of how serious this is and also how pervasive, you might remember, Len, a couple of years ago, I think it was even before we started doing the CBP podcast, Tim Hortons has a phone app that was deconstructed and the data from it pulled and organized by some white hat coder, hacker guy. And the Tim Hortons app even had references in its data set to where you lived, worked, and where you spent most of your time. And I think the story had the example of a guy who was cheating on his spouse, and the Tim Hortons app couldn't figure out whether he lived or worked at her house because he seemed to be spending work hours at his office and home, like sleeping hours at his house. But there was this other third location that was in the gray area, right? And I think it was her place. This is everywhere, okay? And if you think that you're exempt from this or like immune to it somehow because you turned on your no location on your iPhone, like, you got to look at this and think, there's no one safe from this. Nobody is safe from this kind of stuff. And I await with bated breath the next time we hear something about this company on Access of Easy, because I am guaranteeing you here today that it will not be the last time, not with this kind of capability. Wild story. Wild story.
Anytime you use any product and it's free,
you're the product.
How is it free?
You're the product.
It's actually that. And think of all those location services that are being used in all the apps. You mentioned Tim Hortons, but you could even go on a very broader scale, like Google Maps or Apple Maps. How are they free? Right? Like that, there is so much data that had to have been collected to get to this point. And still it's free for a lot of people and people are willingly using it. They're collecting data all the time.
Yeah.
And when they're talking about centimeters for pinpointing information, it also has to be with Wi-Fi. Because that's another thing Google does, is they're able to track locations of people through how the Wi-Fi signal, because they have collected data on all the Wi-Fis.
Yep.
Everybody has.
Apple AirTags, by the way, same thing. It builds a mesh network that uses location and certain device identifiers, I'm sure. It's all bad. Like the Maps thing is an obvious one. People don't realize how clear the data collection is on something like Maps. How do you think Google knows which route from point A to point B for you is the best? it looks at all the people who are on each route because they're sending the data back to the mothership. They know where you are. They know how fast you're going. They know what you're doing. And then they decide, okay, this guy's about to embark. Where should we send him? Route A, route B, route C, whatever. And that's how they decide. Like, that's a clear and obvious one. And I just think I laugh when people are like, oh, it's just traffic data. Like, no, man. No, it's not.
The reality is it's very difficult to get out of that ecosystem once you're in it. How do you function without a smartphone? Because if you're going to have a smartphone, more often than not, you're going to have those services loaded up on your phone. There are, you know, a few options out there to prevent you from having it, but it comes at a cost, obviously. And convenience is one thing that they're going to offer, and people are going to take that bait all day long. It's too bad.
It's a social cost too now, right? Like, if you're under, for you and me, it doesn't really matter. Like, we're, you know, boring married guys, but if you're under 25 without a smartphone, like, you're paying a social cost as well. It's embedded. And so, like, you're on your own when it comes to protecting your data. There's just not many options. That's all. It's like, you know, not a good situation, I would say, to say the least. It's not a good situation if these guys are also a victim to, like, data harvesting like this. You got to imagine Bill Gates, you know, knows how to use a Faraday bag and protect his data. But, you know, here he is, you know, and he's not mentioned in the story specifically, but you can imagine that, you know, he's on the flight list quite a bit. He's probably one of the people they got.
He was servicing their computers.
Oh, he was just working. He was getting the printer going. Have you tried turning it on and off? Okay, I'll swing by the island.
Another data breach is, well, AT&T, and that's a huge company. It's a giant of a company because what we've learned is there was a recent data leak that exposed the personal information of millions of AT&T customers, both current and former. And all this information was exposed on the dark web. And this is obviously a very serious breach. And it's likely that this information has been in the criminals' hands since at least 2019. And the data leak reportedly includes social security numbers and other sensitive information. But AT&T assures customers that no financial information or call history was exposed. If I was the AT&T customer, I would feel oh so much better after hearing that.
5 years later, by the way, as we always
say. That's
just a bit of a gap.
They're still trying to work to figure out what happened. They're taking steps to address the situation, and they've already started to contact those affected customers. And the company has also reset the passcodes for current customers as a precaution as well.
Great.
But it's, you know, AT&T customers have to be on the lookout on their own for security data, right? For any sort of breach on their own. This includes monitoring activity on their accounts, credit card reports, any suspicious activity, all that jazz. But on top of all this, the data breach has prompted an Ohio man to launch a class action lawsuit against AT&T. And he's accusing through this lawsuit of neglect and breach of contract. So this is now making its way through the legal system as well. And AT&T is going to have a real headache to deal with from all this. But in the end, they don't really care. They're a huge company. And there's, you know, who else are you going to go and deal with besides AT&T, right? Like, they're just like a Rogers here in Canada, right? Like,
yeah, except they actually have some competition sometimes.
Well,
yeah, it's
they're still a giant.
This is a funny story. The thing I thought about right away reading the story is about the resetting all passwords for everyone who's a current customer. So now when, you know, if you're a current AT&T customer, you get a text message that says your password's been reset. You know, please contact AT&T for details or whatever they did. Now you got, you know, can you imagine just the sheer volume of customer service traffic, you know, headed over to, you know, the customer service team in Nepal, India, for AT&T right now. Like, they're just getting called. They're getting, like, inundated with requests. What is this, a legit? Is this a legit text? Do I actually have to reset my password? What happened? Blah, blah, blah. That's a nightmare for everyone involved. And then again, like I said, 5 years of data breach, they never told anybody or didn't know. Like, what's worse? I'm not sure. I would guess they knew. The question is, why didn't they say? Well, they didn't say because they don't have to. There's no legislation around what they have to do and when they have to do it. So where's the 2-year monitoring, credit monitoring? Like, are we not doing that anymore? Social insurance numbers leaked. They don't even bother with the 2 years. That's really a slap in the face, I think. You know, that's the industry standard. Do we not care about that? You know, that's damn near an ISO standard at this point. If you get a data breach, 2 years is the required response, free data monitoring from a company that, you know, may or may not do a good job. but at least you get
if they dig in their heels here and they say they're not going to do it, and they make that the new industry standard, you just monitor on your own, and then
you know, you have to monitor more closely.
Yeah, you take care of that. Oh my god, I love it.
what a story.
Now let's go to Israel, because this is an interesting story, but it's something about free speech, because the Israeli government, they passed a new law granting itself the authority to temporarily shut down Al Jazeera. This is a Qatari, is that how you pronounce it?
Gotta be.
Qatari? I don't know. Qatari. Probably. Well, it's a news broadcaster based out of Qatar. I don't know. Either way. This move, obviously, it's sparking a lot of talk out there because, well, the Israeli government, they're trying to justify the decision that this is part of national security grounds and it's going to be helping them achieve more secure over there. But they're also, look at the other side. It's an attack on free speech, right? Like mm-hmm. Al Jazeera, like really? And the legislation went through and it passed with a resounding vote of 74-10 again. So a lot of people in parliament over there, they're in favor of this. Basically now it empowers the prime minister and the communications minister. They now have the authority to authorize the closure of foreign media outlets that any of them that they deem to be a security threat. Come on. And Al Jazeera has been critical of Israeli politics towards the Palestinians. And they've also been very critical against the Israeli government. And they've thrown out a lot of accusations at them. But in the end, I can understand, you know, why they don't like Al Jazeera. But the reality is, let them speak. You know, if they want to provide an opposing viewpoint, let them. That's my opinion. Now, granted, I don't live in Israel and I don't see what's going on in Ground Zero over there. So I see things through a different lens. But just from my vantage point, this looks like it's stifling free speech and it's trying to control the narrative within the country. And when I see that, I have questions. Is this the right path moving forward? Probably not.
I feel like this is almost akin, and this is like a, you know, story that I'm sure Reclaim the Net would publish or did publish about TikTok and the divestment stuff that's going on in the US right now. But this is very similar, right? No one in the US is saying that the divestment rules with TikTok, at least no one in parliament no one in Congress, I should say, or no one in elected office is saying that banning TikTok is a, you know, shot across the bow at democracy. But I think they have a lot in common, right? This one is talking about how anything that's a foreign threat or foreign owned can be shut down, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're obviously doing this under the guise of the Hamas-Israel war, fine. But in the States, there's a similar set of legislation here. It's tough about, you know, companies that are owned by people who are subservient to foreign powers. Like there's no hard and fast definition for that in legal, you know, in lawfare. There's not anything that stops people from framing their enemies as foreign actors. Look at Trump. I mean, these people who are addicted to talking about this guy, we're on eight or nine years now of talking about this guy as a Russian asset. Will they make him sell Truth Social or whatever? I don't know. In terms of this story, you're right. This is interesting because there's a war going on between these two factions. And I think, you know, without getting into the sort of minutiae here, it looks to me like Israel is losing a lot of public support around the world. Like they've taken things a step too far. And, you know, we didn't really criticize, by the way, the Ukrainian government for doing similar stuff with their media landscape during the war. They banned certain things, banned certain parties, banned certain religious gatherings, and banned certain news organizations. But this is a problem, I guess, for some people. I don't know. I'm trying to like weave a thread between all these things. But there's obviously like a different set of standards depending on the country, depending on the moment, depending on the allegiance and whatnot. It's just it's never a good idea. Like the thread should be we should always be against something like this, no matter who's doing it, no matter where it's being done. And it's just not the case. But I'll be looking at this story because this is becoming the sort of foremost global conflict, right? Ukraine seems to be winding down, at least in terms of public interest. And this one is, I think, taking the reins from the Ukraine-Russia conflict. So it's going to be in public sight, and I'll be watching it too.
Oh, man. This next story about Meta or Facebook and Netflix. I didn't understand the connection until after reading this, because there's a lawsuit that's been filed, and this is all because of antitrust laws. This is the gist of this. But so there's a lawsuit filed by U.S. citizens against both Facebook or Meta, whatever you want to call it, and Netflix.
Yeah.
And the lawsuit alleges that the companies are engaging in anti-competitive practices. And this, as I mentioned, is violating antitrust laws. And the root of all this is there's accusations that Facebook allegedly granted Netflix special access to its user data. Mm-hmm. And in this, it actually gave them access to private messages. And in exchange for this access, Netflix supposedly provided Facebook with ad revenue. So it was an exchange. Everybody wins in the end except for the end user. Facebook, on their end, they're saying that they don't deny this stuff. They're saying this didn't happen. They're saying that they've never shared private text messages with Netflix. Now, I'm talking not just Facebook, but I suspect even Snapchat and all that, everything that falls under the umbrella.
So Meta doesn't own Snapchat, but they do own Instagram Facebook, WhatsApp. Yeah.
All that WhatsApp, yeah. So, and they clarify that the access provided only allowed Netflix to send messages to Facebook Messenger without the ability to view the private messaging. Did you believe that to be true? I don't know, but this is going through the courts, and I'm not sure if we're going to get the whole truth from this, but I sure hope this exposes something. If there is some sort of agreement between the two companies, and if indeed Facebook did share private messages with Netflix, this should create a whole outrage for the users of all those products that you mentioned. And hopefully it will migrate them over to something that is more secure, a la Signal or Sessions or Keet or you name it. There's a lot of peer-to-peer systems out there that you could use for messaging services that don't rely on a centralized body like Instagram or WhatsApp or whatever. So this hopefully is going to open the eyes for a lot of people out there, but I have my doubts. I think still people are just going to use these apps because, again, it's easy, it's convenient, and they don't care about their privacy for the most part until they get impacted, and then they'll pivot. By that point, it's too late.
Social cost is a big thing. We talked about it earlier. If you don't have an Instagram account now, it's like, why don't you have one? Like, what are you hiding? Yeah, but you're, you know, a little older than me. For people my age, it's like a red flag, I would say. You need to have like a public facing. It's like a CV for dating and romance. Anyway, I don't think that I don't think that Facebook, like, I'm trying to imagine a world where they sell the data, like the DMs, but they're anonymized somehow, or like what Netflix is looking for in Facebook DMs. That, to me, that's the redeeming thing here. For people who say that, well, there's no way Facebook, you know, sold the DMs, I would say maybe, maybe not. But why? What would Netflix get out of a DM conversation? This I can't figure out. I'm not sure. I get why Netflix would want to talk to people via Facebook DMs, because people check that stuff all the time. I'll mention that I don't have a DM from Netflix in my Instagram account, at least not yet. But I don't know why they would pay for the DMs of every Facebook user. It just seems unlikely to me.
If you're chatting about anything? Because it's easy to troll that. To go through the information and just to parse it for any show or any movie.
That's what I mean. Like anonymized, maybe it would make more sense. It almost doesn't make a lot of sense to buy the messages and use them for anything except keyword searches. But like, to me, Facebook's doing that anyway with ads. So if you're thinking that you're not getting, you know, if you're not getting got in that way, as the kids say, vis-a-vis Facebook ads and Instagram ads, this is really no different. And I would expect that Facebook is doing something similar with a lot of smaller companies that want to target you via ads. Maybe it doesn't make the news because it's not $100 million or whatever the cost is, but certainly they're using this in their ads platform, are they not? Like, I should just start up a Facebook ads thing and see what the, you know, what the cost is and what you get. I would guess they're using the same data. So it's nothing new for me. And, you know, I don't use Instagram or whatever for DMs anyway, unless I'm like sending memes to my wife or my buddies. But I guess if you are using Instagram DMs for nefarious activities, I mean, if I was a little younger, a younger version of me was definitely shooting my shot via DMs, you know, a lot. So I think there's something to be said there. Like, I'd be worried about that. But generally, Len, like, they're doing this anyways, are they not? So to me, I don't see the problem. particular, like as far as like the big deal that's being made of this, I just don't see why it's being made a big deal outside of the volume and the price.
The fact that it's potentially being done, that's something
they're doing it now. They're doing it now. They must
talk about just the private messaging. That's because there's still a thread of doubt if indeed they're sharing that information.
I don't know. I think.
And if we could seal that doubt and say, yeah, it's being done. There's no doubt about it because it's been proven in court. Mm-hmm. That's pretty damning evidence.
And,
you know, when you talk about a DM, I know we all understand. I mean, people listening and watching this show understands that using something like Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook to send a DM, it's not secure. But a lot of people out there, they believe it is.
That's right.
And who knows what are they sharing behind closed doors? What they say publicly and what they say privately are two different things. Even we do the same thing. What we say in private chats, you know. But that's for a
topic. That's you admitting that, not me. So anyone else who's watching this, I did not admit that.
Only I share my cat videos. Anyone who wants to talk to me privately, I will never do that publicly. But I do like the cat videos. I'll be perfectly honest. I like cats. Anyways, I'll say that. Incognito, Google. Oh, man, this is talked about this, but there's been some resolution here because the recent class action lawsuit that's been filed against Google, this has come to a close and a settlement has been reached. And that could impact how users browse the web privately. So the lawsuit centered around Google's collection of browsing data while incognito form. And this is a feature that's in Chrome web browser. And what it's designed to do is offer more private browsing experience, right? And the plaintiffs in the lawsuit argued that Google misled users about the true extent of incognito's privacy protection. And while incognito mode prevents browsing history from being saved on the local device, the alleged lawsuit was that Google continued to collect browsing data in the background, and this data collection could potentially be used for targeted advertising or other purposes. We just talked about sharing data in the last story. So the resolution of this lawsuit, Google has agreed to make some significant changes to its practices. First, they will delete billions. They say they will delete billions of data records that it collected from users while they were using incognito mode. And this is going to be addressing the core allegation of the lawsuit. And secondly, Google has pledged to improve the transparency surrounding its data collection practices. And they're going to update their disclosures to more clearly explain what data is being collected and how it's being used, specifically while you're in incognito mode. But how many people are just going to swipe through those terms of services and accept it? And the last thing, Google will finally introduce a new feature that will allow users to block third-party cookies in incognito mode. And other apps do allow this. I have Vanadium, I think I pronounced that correctly. That's an app that's native to my Graphene OS. And this allows me to block cookies if I use incognito. So I would suggest out there are other options you could use in terms of using browsers. Don't strictly use Google Chrome. I know that it's a very popular browser out there, but there's security holes out there, privacy holes out there that need to be closed off. Something like Firefox is widely available. Brave is another one that a lot of people cite for great for security and privacy. Check for whatever works for you. Even Mulvad browser is another one out there that you could use. There's a lot of different options available for you out there. Don't strictly rely on Google Chrome. Look at something else. Be a little bit more privacy centric, and it's going to help you out in the long run, because clearly Google, they don't give a crap about you. They're collecting, or they were collecting, your data up until this point, even in incognito. Shame on you, Google. Shame.
How much do you believe that they're actually doing any of this stuff
behind the scenes?
Yeah,
there's a little bit of doubt I have in my head that they're not gonna do what they say, but I suspect probably they're gonna do it, but I can't say for certain.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do much of this, honestly. I think they'll reword, rephrase, and redefine some of these things and still continue collecting data. It is good to see they're taking a break from their focus on showing me pictures of Black George Washington to, you know, issue this statement and hopefully make these changes. But I just don't buy it. Like, I don't use Chrome for anything anymore. And I know there's, you know, evils in other browsers too, but Chrome, all you have to do is just look at the resource hogging that that browser does to know that there's more going on than just showing you a web page. And, you know, I would stay away from Google tech, honestly, at almost at all costs at this point. They're not even trying to hide that they're using your data. And by the way, on this show, we talk a lot about YouTube and other Google products. They're not a good company. They're not pro human progress, period, end of story. They're pro censorship, pro data harvesting, pro manipulation via targeting. And I would just stay away from them at all costs. That's my opinion.
Last story, the XZ utils. This is impacting Linux users out there. And this is all, it's a XZ backdoor. And XZ is part of compression tools that are available in a lot of different Linux distros. And this is a recent security vulnerability that was discovered. And so here's the breakdown. So malicious code has been inserted in XZ versions 5.60 and 5.61. Mm-hmm. And this is data compression tools that's used in Linux. So right away, anybody that's using Linux, I would suggest going, opening up a terminal, checking to see what version of XZ you have, if indeed you have it installed. So if it's 5.6 or 5.61, suggest you downgrade to a lesser version, 5.4 or even earlier. And the backdoor could have potentially allowed attackers to remotely take control of vulnerable systems. And this was just discovered a few weeks ago in March 2024 by somebody named Andreas Freyond. I think I pronounced this correctly. He's a Microsoft engineer, not a security expert. So the write-up he provided was very detailed, but it wasn't from the eyes and the lens of a security expert. So that's what a lot of people are taking away from this. But he did a great service by at least alerting other people of what's going on. The culprit behind the backdoor is believed to be a former maintainer of XZ project named Gia Jan. I think I pronounced that name right. And he reportedly, or she reportedly, gained trust within the project over time before introducing the malicious code. And this impact is limited to a lot of distributions, but not all of them. This is kind of, right now, it's a bleeding edge update. So not all systems do have this new XZ that's 5.6 or 5.61. But it impacts also SSH. So if you do want to keep the 5.6 or 5.61 for whatever reason, you can simply just disable SSH, and that's one way to mitigate attackers from getting access to your system. But then you're limiting the functionality of your system. You can't log in through it. Either way, I would suggest downgrading this as well. And this is also interesting of note, is typically open source. When you have an open source system, you have more eyes looking at stuff, and problems like this tend not to make it through.
They're rare.
So this is a rarity. This is almost a one-off. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen all the time. It does happen. But in this case, this is an indication where open source has failed users in the end. And it's too bad, but this was a long time coming. The way I understand it, this user, Gia Tan, was many, many years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, started this whole project. So this has been a long project that he, she, or they had in mind. And just finally now, that seed is now bearing fruit. So this is very, very interesting stuff. So again, if you have XZ installed on your Linux computer, downgrade it to 5.4 or an earlier version, or shut off and disable SSH. Those are your only two options. If not, you're going to be playing with fire.
Yeah, man, it's funny. We talk on the show a lot about making sure you're up to date with your software, whether you're on Ubuntu or another Linux distro or Windows or whatever. An example of maybe why that's not always a good idea. Like you said, the one-off is this is a carefully executed attack, right? You have an open source developer who burns out, according to the story, and we talked about this last week a little bit too, according to the story, and just stops doing the maintenance on this particular project. Someone else takes over. Everyone just kind of assumes it's a good actor. The changes are very subtle. They're very small, but they compound over time to the point where now anyone running the latest version of this, you know, can basically be opened up for anyone, right? That if you're using that XZ, XZ, whatever distro or not distro, utility, you got a problem. And I understand that's a basic part of the Linux system. Like, everyone uses that. It's like the zip utility, is that right?
Yeah, it's a popular compression tool.
Yeah,
that's used, and you know, it just goes to show you. And I talk about this every so often. There's no one system that is totally secure,
for sure.
Everyone has holes in it. It's up to you to close those holes and make sure that they remain closed. not if you just rely on the reputation of something alone.
You're gonna get burned. Yeah, you're gonna get burned. Okay. Well, that's it, everybody. God bless. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your Saturday. Enjoy your Sunday. All that stuff. Come back next week for more Access of Easy, or maybe come to the CVP Monday night, streaming at 7 o'clock Eastern every Monday, as always. My name is Joey. That's Len. And until next time, take care of yourselves.